This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother stone. You better learn your past, you better learn young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Welcome. The installment tonight is titled The Racial Roots of Europeans, and I'm going to call it a part one. I think I'll do at least two parts on this. I have enough material to talk about. This is really an extension of Who's White. I just didn't want to make a part five and a six and so on. I wanted to break it up a little bit, and the character here is going to change a bit too. I'm not going to be talking so much about ideological and contemporary definitions of who is white, but instead trying to go back to the very beginnings of our biological basis for who we are as Europeans. So I have to ask right here at the beginning for you to bear with me too, because, and this is going to require some attention on your part as well, because there's a lot of words that I'm going to use tonight and in the next installment that I don't use in everyday speech, and many of these words I had never tried to pronounce before. I had read them maybe here or there, and but a lot of this information is new to me, and a lot of these words are new to me, and I had to look up how to pronounce many of them, and I'll probably mangle a few for those of you who are familiar with this subject matter. If you'd like to leave a comment for me and refer me to other sources that you think might be better or would supplement this, I'd welcome that. This, more than any installment up until now, I really am new to this subject, and I'm trying to figure it out myself. In fact, I'm enjoying this part of the podcast because it's not really me sharing something that I've figured out long ago or put together pretty thoroughly, but instead I'm kind of groping my way through this history and trying to make sense of it. So let me start by describing what it is that I'm interested in getting at here. I've already talked about the Aryans, and parts, bits and pieces of this previously, and how there were two halves to European biology, the old Europeans who were in Europe already before the Aryans came 5,000 to 6,000 years ago, storming into Europe, and that modern-day Europeans are an amalgam of those two different peoples. And it's actually a little more complicated than that, as I hope to get to tonight, and if not tonight, then in the next installment. But, you know, I've already used the terms in previous podcasts, Neolithic Europe and pre-Indo-European Europe. This is really going to focus on Stone Age Europe. The Neolithic Age was really just the most recent of the, it was the end of the Stone Age, really. And let me lay out a timeline here. I don't expect you to remember all of these names, but just I'll go back and try to review this as I mention these names again in the text that I'm going to be reading from. Going back to the beginning of where I want to start is about 2.5 million years ago. And that is, in geologic time called that's the beginning of the, Pleistocene era. And the Pleistocene era lasted from about 2.5 million years ago to about 12,000 years ago. And then, from 12,000 years ago till today is called the Holocene. And those are geologic eras that are separated from each other by evidence in geologically. But it turns out that they're also roughly, they correspond to human development. It turns out that Homo erectus first appeared, at least the earliest found evidence about 2 million years ago, and it's very likely that its development was triggered initially, I'm just speculating here, but that the geologic divide between the Pleistocene and the Holocene is actually where Homo erectus first developed, but we don't have evidence going back that far, only 2 million years. Anyway, the Pleistocene era and Holocene eras are actually split into more human oriented eras as well, and we know these as the Stone Age, or what's called the Paleolithic era, and then there's the Mesolithic era and the Neolithic era, and the Mesolithic is really a kind of vague, ambiguous era in between, sandwiched in between the Paleolithic and the Neolithic. And then after the Neolithic comes the Bronze Age and the Iron Age. Now, just to give an overview here, during the Paleolithic, that was the Stone Age, and European man really didn't have any farming or any iron hadn't learned how to smelt metal yet, was purely hunter-gatherer. And it's during the Mesolithic and Neolithic that that began to change. I think it was during the Neolithic when farming was introduced, and agriculture and animal husbandry, and it was during the Bronze Age, and actually in the beginning of, or somewhere during the Neolithic Age, when the invasions, the incursions of both Mediterranean peoples and the Aryans into Europe began, and then it was really in earnest during the Bronze Age. It was the Aryans that brought the bronze and iron into Europe. So let me give some dates on these things. The Paleolithic era extends from 2.5 million years ago until about 8,000 BC. And the Neolithic era is from about 8,000 BC to about 3,000. And the Bronze Age was from 3,000 BC to about 1,000 BC, and the Iron Age was from 1,000 BC until now. There's not going to be a test on this at the end of the podcast. I'll quote those numbers again to try and give some context when these things come up as I go along here. One of the things to keep in mind here is this time span that we're talking about is geologic in its scope. It's way beyond what a human being, I think, can understand in everyday terms of your lifespan. 2.5 million years is a vast amount of time. And just to give you an idea, during that time period, there have been many, many ice ages, many times when continental ice sheets covered North America and Europe. And the intervals of those ice sheets covering those continents happened every 40,000 to 100,000 years. They call those glacial periods. And in between those glacial periods were periods of relative warming, when it was more temperate, and they call those interglacials. And the Holocene, in fact, this modern era that we're in now, for the last 12,000 years, is an interglacial period. We're in a relatively warm period today. I just want to mention as an aside here, this thing called Doggerland. Somebody commented on, I think it was two podcasts ago, left a comment saying, "What about Doggerland?" That was it. That's all they said. And I was tempted to just, delete the comment. I thought it was spam or some nonsense comment. And then I Googled Doggerland. I had never heard of it before, but apparently it was in the news this summer. It's sort of an Atlantis. It's what they call the landmass that is now submerged under the North Sea, mainly the North Sea, but it's, during the ice ages, when water was locked up in the ice, the seas, the oceans were much lower, and particularly around what is today modern Great Britain. And I've seen different maps that show Britain, the mainland of England and Scotland connected to Europe, but also when it was at its real lowest, that even Ireland and a vast portion of land jutting out that whole British Isles was basically just a peninsula sticking off of the end of Europe. And this was 6,500 BC or so, that and maybe a little bit earlier than that, but it survived until 6,500 BC, and that's when it began gradually flooding as the ice melted. But evidence of this Doggerland was actually turned up. I think the first bit of evidence was plants that were dredged up from the North Sea as long ago as 1913. And then in 1931, there was a barbed antler point that was pulled up by a fishing vessel. But it must have come to a head. Something happened this summer. I found many, when you Google for Doggerland, you'll find many news reports that are dated in July and of this past summer. I missed those news reports for some reason. I wasn't paying attention. But it has to do with oil surveys, and because of the data that they have of, you know, the view under the ocean, they can actually see ancient river courses and so forth. And so people got very excited about this and the idea that that there used to be this, that they've discovered Atlantis. The point for us here, I think, is that as recently as 6,500 years ago, the landmass was more contiguous, and so people were more free to roam. You know, the ocean has never been much of a boundary for the white man, but throughout our history, but it does pose more difficulty for moving around. And when Doggerland existed, people could move freely, and there was more land, more space to be hunters and gatherers on. So enough about that. I've mentioned in previous podcasts about books that I could refer people to, and I'm going to cite one here. A fellow named Carlton S. Kuhn wrote a book. He wrote several books, but I'm going to read some sections from one shortly. Carlton Kuhn was an American physical anthropologist. He was born in 1904 and died in 1981. And he was what we would call today a racist or a race realist. He didn't buy into this nonsense that there's just one race, the human race. He saw differences in people. And according to Wikipedia's page on him, his interest was in attempting to use Darwin's theory of natural selection to explain the differing physical characteristics of races. The Wikipedia page also makes a note that Kuhn used the term white race in a broad sense as a synonym for Caucasoid, what most people today would call Caucasian or think of as a including Europeans, but the Europeans are a subset. Kuhn and in the definitions that I've cited up until now, white is limited pretty much to European. It's not Caucasoid or Caucasian. That's a broader concept. So, but anyway, Kuhn, I think his intent is in the right place. He was trying to get at the origin of races. And in fact, he wrote a book published in 1962 by that title. He mentioned in that book that, or he asserted in that book that the human species was divided into five races before it had evolved into Homo sapiens. Now, I had touched on this in a previous installment, this out of Africa theory, which is the dominant theory today in science, or at least it's the politically correct one. And that is that man evolved as one line and differentiated into what we call races today only recently. Well, Kuhn didn't believe that. Kuhn believed that there were racial differences as far back as Homo erectus. And Homo erectus, as I said, first appeared about 2 million years ago, and the most recent examples of it that are classified as Homo erectus are about 300,000 years ago. So in that range, that's where Homo erectus existed. And Kuhn and others who believe in this, there's actually a name for it. It's called the multi-regional origin of modern humans, as opposed to the recent African origin of modern humans, which is the dominant theory. This multi-regional origin instead sees the races tracing all the way back to Homo erectus, at least 300,000 years ago, and probably as far back as 2 million years ago, human beings were already dividing. Now, there was gene flow between those divisions, but the divisions were already established at some point during Homo erectus's evolution. In fact, let me cite a little piece here from this Wikipedia article on multi-regional origin of modern humans. It seems that recent science has vindicated it a little bit, or at least boosted its likelihood of being true. Recent analyses of DNA taken directly from Neanderthal specimens, however, indicate that they contributed to the genome of all humans outside of Africa. The Homo sapiens who populate the world outside Africa all have Neanderthals among their ancestors. So that's interesting. I'll get into who the Neanderthals are, but they're more ancient than the supposed African origin of modern humans. Carlton Kuhn also wrote a book, and this was an earlier book published in 1939, focused specifically on Europe, and it was titled The Races of Europe. And I'm going to read from his introduction to that. He gives a pretty good overview of who we are biologically. He writes, "We suggest that the ancestors of the whites in their major form developed during the pluvial periods." Pluvial just means rainy. "The pluvial periods of the Pleistocene in parts of what are now the arid zone reaching from the Sahara to northern India." That's a pretty broad swath there, from the Sahara Desert in North Africa all the way to northern India. "That in post-glacial times, many were forced out of these homes by desiccation, and that some of them originated agriculture and animal husbandry in northeastern Africa and southwestern Asia. From these centers, agricultural pioneers followed post-glacial zones of climate into Europe, gradually encroaching upon the lands formerly glaciated. In most of the regions which they occupied, they greatly outnumbered the descendants of the hunters and fishers whose ancestors had clung on since glacial times, and many of whom had followed the retreating ice toward its last melting nuclei." I'm going to skip a couple of paragraphs here where he talks about the people in the Mediterranean to focus on Europe. "At any rate, the main conclusion of this study will be that," and he italicizes this part till the end, "the present races of Europe are derived from A, food-producing peoples from Asia and Africa of basically Mediterranean racial form, with B, the descendants of interglacial and glacial food gatherers produced in turn by a blending of basic Homo sapiens related to the remote ancestor of the Mediterraneans, with some non-sapiens species of general Neanderthaloid form." That's a mouthful, and it's hard to understand that, but I'll pick that apart again in a little while. Just a last little bit here. "The actions and interactions of environment, selection, migration, and human culture upon the various entities within this amalgam have produced the white race in its present complexity." So that's getting at the complexity that I talked about. It's more than just Aryans plus old Europeans. There is this Mediterranean element as well, and the Mediterranean element, at least in Kuhn's estimation, is the element. It's the sort of parent, the ancestor of both the peoples who moved into Europe following the glaciers and became the old Europeans, or at least the basic stock of the old Europeans, and also what ultimately became the Aryans, who came out of the southwestern part of Asia, that Pontic steppe area between the Black Sea and the whatever that other sea there is, the Caspian. Silly of me not to know that. It's on that map that I put on the Who's White, Part 1. Let me continue here. that's a whole textbook. Carlton Kuhn wrote an entire textbook titled The Races of Europe, and his whole purpose was to get at who white people were, and in a broader sense, who the Caucasian peoples were, which he called the white race. And if you're interested, it's online. You can read the whole thing. You don't have to buy, go to a rare bookstore to find it. Knock yourself out and read the whole book if you want. I personally think it might not be worth it because it's from 1939. A lot has been learned since then, mainly in the genetic area. So I'm going to cite here and read and focus most of my attention from here on a more recent document. You could call it a book, although it's never been published. And that is William Pierce's Who We Are. And this, too, is available online as a PDF. As I understand, it was never truly completed. It's a work that was gathered as separate articles. I think the intent was to produce something like a book. But I really don't know. I wasn't there. There's no description attached to this document. And probably others within the National Alliance helped Pierce to write this. I don't think he wrote the whole thing himself, although he probably wrote large portions of it. This work is broader than the subject that I want to discuss here, so I'm only going to read small selections out of it. This really is a comprehensive, this Who We Are document is a really comprehensive overview of who we are as a people from 2.5 million years ago and even earlier to beyond, and all of the details of European history. And I would highly recommend reading this. This is even more accessible than Carlton Kuhn's text is, and it's more modern. It's more up to date. So there are some probably some details in this that Carlton Kuhn didn't know, couldn't have written about. So I'll start here with a section titled Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon. So you've probably heard these words before. I know I had, but it was always vague in my mind. Where does Neanderthals fit in with Cro-Magnons and the Ice Ages and the Stone Age and all of this stuff was sort of a jumble in my mind, and I really hadn't ever put the pieces together about the sequence of events and how these things happen, how these different concepts are related to each other. Well, I think this is one of the things that this Who We Are Pierce's document here really does a good job of. So Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon. About 100,000 years ago, as Europe entered an intensely cold period of heavy glaciation, a type of Homo sapiens which differed in some respects from both earlier and later populations appeared. This type has been named Neanderthal man after the river valley in Germany where his first fossil remains were unearthed in 1856. Neanderthal man was more prognathous, meaning having a jaw that projects forward in a marked way, had heavier brow ridges and also displayed other skeletal features regarded as more primitive than his immediate predecessors. But his brain was not only larger than that of his predecessors, it was also larger than that of modern Europeans. About 30,000 years ago, the Neanderthal populations were replaced with a type of man which was essentially modern in all respects. He did not display Neanderthal man's prognathism or heavy brow ridges, but his brain was equally large, about 80 cubic centimeters larger than that of today's whites. He has been called Cro-Magnon man after the site in the Dordogne region of France, where his fossil remains were first excavated by scientists in 1868. So let me just review this here. So we're seeing that, and who we are, if you're really interested in what happened between 2.5 million years ago and 100,000 years ago when Cro-Magnon first, or Neanderthal first appeared, I'd recommend you read Who We Are from the beginning and understand for yourself. But I'm going to pick up here from 100,000 years ago to about 30,000 years ago, Neanderthal appeared, and then 30,000 years ago, Cro-Magnon appeared, and that they were distinct from each other. The skeletons were noticeably different, and so they were able to be distinguished by scientists. Next, I'm going to skip quite a bit here to let me read a paragraph here I hadn't intended to, but maybe this will put something in perspective. Because Neanderthal man does not fit smoothly into a picture of continuous unidirectional evolution between earlier and later European populations, paleontologists have suggested various explanations for his appearance in Europe 100,000 years ago and his disappearance 30,000 years ago. And then he goes into to explain two different possibilities. And the point, I think, is that we don't know, and it would be nice to have objective investigation of this. This is where white people telling our own story and trying to understand our own story is important. And unfortunately, at the moment, science is dominated by Jews, and those Jews are mostly of the mind that race doesn't exist and really frown upon anybody paying too close attention to racial differences. So it really gets distorted, even though it's science and even though it should be objective and scientific, it's distorted by this political agenda, which is hostile to whites. I'll skip ahead here several paragraphs to a section titled Upper Paleolithic Man. Now, the Paleolithic period is divided. I glossed this over at the beginning when I was talking about it, but this Stone Age, the Paleolithic era, actually is divided into three separate sections, what they call the lower, the middle, and the upper. The lower is the longest period of time, from 2.5 million to about 200,000 years ago. The middle is from 200,000 years ago to 40,000 years ago. And the upper Paleolithic is the most interesting, and that's why Pierce is about to focus on it here. It's from 40,000 years ago until about 8,000 BC. The upper Paleolithic, I remember reading here in his thing, I'm not going to quote it, but that what distinguishes the upper Paleolithic humans from previous humans was a noticeable cultural difference that even though biologically he looked the same, his culture changed radically. I'm out of time for this week, but let me conclude by reading the introduction of who we are and why this is important. Pierce lays it out very well. No people is morally or spiritually healthy unless it is imbued with a strong sense of its own identity. Essential to that sense of identity are an awareness and an understanding of all the qualities which the members of the people share in common. It is doubly imperative that every man and woman who claims the privilege of membership in a community based on the bonds of common race and common culture knows and takes pride in his racial and cultural history. For in this history are all the elements which give his community its unique character and differentiate its members from all those who are not members. When such knowledge and pride are lacking, a community is subject to a host of ills and cannot long endure. Solidarity and a sense of responsibility to the community give place to special interest, factionalism, and alienation. Well, join me next time to hear some more.